Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Hello and welcome in to Jayhawk Talk Radio here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Kevin Meckley. Andrew Payne is across from me here in studio. Our guy Kyle Collier is behind the glass, keeping us in line. Appreciate you, Kyle. Look, we got a big show tonight. We're going to be joined in studio, Andrew, by the one and only voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Brian Haney. That'll be fun.
So you and I will not just get to hear the voice. We'll get to see
the
face.
We'll get to see the voice. Yeah.
All right. See the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks.
Look, I don't know if you know this.
What?
I don't know if you know this, Andrew.
Huh?
Today marks our 200th show together.
Oh, wow.
Did you know that?
I did know that.
You did know that?
I did know that.
200th show together. That started back in an apartment in Lawrence. You know, the old started off in a garage. You know,
the
company started off in the garage. It started off in your crappy apartment. And actually, it wasn't that crappy.
It was nice.
It was kind of a nice apartment.
It
was a nice little apartment. It was a nice apartment for that time. But we started off there together. Here we are. 200 shows later, and the Jayhawks got us a gift for our 200th show.
Yeah, give us a, I believe we call this, and there's been a handful of these in our history of doing this. I believe we title these, and we call these, as a genre, the Sky is Falling episodes.
Uh-huh.
And you can look back to some past Sky is Falling episodes when we lost to TCU.
Sure.
For the first time in Fort Worth and lost three in a row there. That's early Jayhawk Talk Radio. Jayhawk Talk.
Sky is Falling. And
by the way,
good news there, by the way. I'll just fast forward. The sky didn't fall.
No.
Fully.
Although, I'll tell you, Kevin, walking out of that game yesterday, you and I both attended, it's a rough game. A rough game on Tuesday.
It was rough.
It was rough. We did walk out of the stadium, and the sky literally
was falling.
It was falling. There were things coming out of the sky onto your face in the wind. So it was not a pleasant time to be in Lawrence there on Tuesday. But, you know, we're going to get through it. We're going to talk about that BYU game. We're going to talk about kind of the future of this season's program, this season's team. You know, maybe get some football in. But, you know, happy 200th episode,
Happy Kevin. 200th episode to you, Andrew. And I will say, when you're talking about, you skipped there pretty fast, but there's a football thing to talk about.
Yeah, some football.
This is exciting.
Big, if there's a positive element in the Jayhawk community, it's a football thing that was announced yesterday that we're very happy about.
Yeah, let's not bury the lead too far here. We're obviously going to talk about this, but our man Lance Leipold agrees to a little bump in pay raise. What was he making at Buffalo? Let's just say he's making about seven times that in just three short years. So pretty nice little bump for him, and reflecting probably a deserving raise there.
Very, very deserving. And, you know, he bumps from five to seven, and we'll get into this a little bit further. But, you know, that's a lot. But I think it's more of a symbolic, other than anything. It's a, hey, we're going to make you a top three coach in the Big 12 because you've brought us to a top three program.
It's a top three program
in the Big 12. And
it's only fair.
Here's where we are. We knew we wanted to do this, but you couldn't just go give that money to any random coach. They had to have some success. And boy, has Lance Leipold had some success.
I've always been a proponent of paying the coach $1 million for every win they have. That's
okay.
Always been my line.
Okay.
You win 10 games, you're worth $10 million. You win 12 games, you're worth $12 million. You win one game in the Power 5, you'll be paid for $1 million, but not for long, because you're probably going to be gone. So, like, that's the deal. You win $1 million for every win, and that's it.
It's an interesting concept. There were several years in the span of the
you might get
the
zero
Jayhawk Talk program that you might get zero.
You might get zero.
Yikes.
But that's what you get. Anyway, so I like the building in the upside. When inevitably the Jayhawks go to the college football playoffs, he should get a bump then, and reflect again, not just top three program in the Big 12, but top whatever program in the nation. He's going to be paid as a top 20 coach. Top 20 coach with this new contract. So that's a top 20 program. You get into the playoffs, he needs to be paid as a top 12 coach. That's what that's the logical outcome there. So we'll get to that. We got a ton more to talk about. But Andrew, let's reflect on the week that was. We obviously had the Texas game earlier in the week, a little bit of a different result than what we saw on Tuesday. A fun game in Allen Fieldhouse. I was there. You were there. Great energy. The team was fired up. Ended up really coming out early, stomping them, and really never letting go. Finished up, what was a 19-point game? It was probably not even that close. What did you think of that Texas game? And then we'll contrast that a bit with what we saw on Tuesday against BYU.
Sure. I mean, the contrast is that we saw the ceiling against Texas, and you've seen this team reach that ceiling in several games this year. I mean, going back to UConn, Houston at home, Texas at home. These are where this team could be. And the Texas game was even without Kevin McCullough. And Houston to a certain extent, too, based on the injury. But you see where we can be. And then you can see where we also can be. There is a big dichotomy in terms of consistency, and a lot of that comes from shot making, and a lot of that comes from defensive consistency. And that defensive consistency was there. Texas had nothing until the very end. They made a couple shots to make it close, and by close I mean 19 points instead of 27 points. Yeah. Tyrese Hunter hit a couple at the end, and that made his stat line look a little bit better. But nobody's stat line offensively for Texas on Saturday was very good. Everybody was struggling against a pretty staunch Jayhawk defense, and everybody played well defensively. I mean, you can look across the board. Even Nick Timberlake stepped up a little bit and played tough. If anything, he played tough in that game, and it showed based on eye test and based on the statistics and based on the final score. So what a fun game on Saturday. That's where you can see what this team can be.
Sure. Yeah, I think the vibes were pretty strong coming out of that game. Vibes were good.
We vanquished an old foe, a foe that we may not face again for years and years and years, that's depending on what happens in this year's Big 12 tournament. But theoretically, we will not face the Texas Longhorns for a long time. So pour one out for the Longhorns. We've had a long, almost three-decade battle with this program. Yeah. They could have been like that second program behind Kansas in that 30-year span in terms of the primary rival, primary foe. It will be sad to see them go.
There were some fun games in that.
There's a lot of fun games, but they're gone now. Now we've got some new foes, and have been up and down with those new foes.
On the Texas game, quick, I was there with my kids, and my son, who's almost seven. He was really big into the horns down.
Yeah,
thing.
I saw that. You sent me a picture, and I said,
"Really
that
big into that."
Is a disgusting gesture that your son is making. Disrespectful.
He was being as disrespectful. He probably flashed more horns down than anyone in the stadium that
good.
Day. Figured it out. Double fisting the horns down all game long, and teaching my 4-year-old daughter, who can't quite coordinate her fingers quite as well, doing her version of it the whole game. And so we fast forward to the BYU game, and he goes the morning of. He's like, "Dad, we're playing tonight." I'm like, "Yeah, we're playing BYU, buddy." He's like, "Who are they?" I'm like, "Yeah, the Cougars, they're kind of new to the conference. We haven't played them much." He goes, "Well, what's the gesture we do for them?"
Oh.
What's the horns down for BYU? And I was like, buddy, I don't know that there is one. And he goes, "Look it up. Look it up." Like, that's what he does. I'm like, if I don't know the answer, look it up.
Yeah, my son does that too. Like, this Google age, like, hey,
yeah, just
don't
look
know
up.
An answer, look it up.
Look it up.
We
Someone
can figure
knows.
This out.
So I didn't, that's the problem as I look back now. Had we had a horns down type of a thing to do to BYU,
we would have won.
We probably would have won.
We would have won.
So I think we need to create one of these for every program in the Big 12. Now I think there's a lot of them.
Yeah, now we have 30 years of history with the Longhorns. We don't have that with the Cougars. We might as well
create a new horns down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's something to think about out there. If you have some ideas, make sure you reach out to us on on the old Twitter, Jayhawk Talk. Let us know, because we need to find this. This is a new thing we got to figure out for the rest of the year and into next year. So
hold on, we got to do this for every team.
Every team, because my son again is going to ask every morning.
Can we?
The game, what's the horns down for this team?
Can we duplicate BYU and Houston? Because they're both the Cougars.
Yeah, I think.
Or does
fine.
It have
we
to
can
be
start
unique?
To combine. Well, we got two Wildcats coming in too.
Oh man,
we got Wildcats for days.
Cougars and Wildcats. We got all these different cats, mascots coming in. It's going to be just you know, I'm lamenting a little bit the old Big 12.
Yeah.
And with these new teams coming in, the new format and the tournament and unbalanced schedule, it's going to take me a moment to get acclimated to where we are. And maybe it's because we're not necessarily thriving in this new system yet.
Well,
that I'm not getting accustomed to it as quickly as I want to be. But, you know, we'll get there.
We'll get there. So I guess get to that BYU game here for a minute before we break. The game was a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde. We saw early on, you got up 12. You know, things were going pretty well. KJ was kind of getting what he wanted. It was a mismatch there, certainly. They were missing shots early, which obviously is helpful because that's what they do. They fire three-pointers and they go inside out. If they don't have anything, they kind of shove inside and wait for the double. And they took advantage in that second half, clearly, of us switching five. And that was, I'm not a, you know, basketball X's and O's aficionado. I know a little bit, but everyone in the building could see that Hunter Dickinson was getting pulled on a switch. And when they got the matchup they wanted, they kept doing it until they got that matchup. And if it wasn't there, they'd go inside, wait for the double team would come, fire back out, wide open three. I mean, it was just like, rinse and repeat. And the switching five thing, I know it was obviously part of the scouting report, and it was might have been the right thing to do, but it obviously, you know, they figured it out pretty quick and they exploited that. And can you say that was a bad bad scouting report? Can you say that was bad coaching? Can you say they didn't adjust? I'm not willing to say necessarily one way or the other. I know that BYU played better to their strengths than we did.
Yeah, they deserved to win the game last night. They definitely played well to their strengths. And talk about contrast in styles. I mean, they, you know, we used to play this old four out, one in offense, and now we're playing a five in offense.
Hard essentially. To say what it is exactly.
I mean, and they're playing a five out. I mean, yeah. they're two big guys shoot threes, and they both made them yesterday.
Yeah.
And so they definitely had that contrast in styles. We haven't seen a whole lot of that in the Big 12 this year. So it was something unique that we had to prepare for. You saw it work out in the first half, and their shots weren't going down. I wouldn't say they did anything completely different in the second half, but they were making the shots. Kevin, they scored 47 points in the second half. 47. It's hard to remember a time in a half that a team has scored 47
points
against this defense. And so it's just a struggle. I mean, I think that defensively the blame can go around to everybody. I think that there are people who contributed up and down that lineup where the defensive struggles were very evident.
For sure. And to your point, I mean, they clearly knew who they are, or they knew they come knowing when they came in, they knew who they were going to be. They were not going to sacrifice anything to that against playing KU or an Allen Fieldhouse. And then they picked their spots and took advantage of it. And we did not.
And they played tough.
They were tough. They were scrappy.
We were scrappy, and they were a little bit scrappier.
And I think it even maybe surprised some of our guys a little bit. You walk into the stadium, you look in the airport, and BYU walks through, and it's not the airport team that scares you, right? You know, it's they get off the plane, you look at them, but they're scrappy. And they're old, Andrew. They're old.
Yeah.
They're old. That's the old BYU
some,
take. They're
some
old.
Extra experience.
Additional
experience. That's all right. That's just going to be the way it is with this team. And we're going to see them every year now. You know, with his unbalanced scheduling, we'll only see him once this year.
We got to get to Provo.
Yeah, you'd like Provo.
I want to get out to Provo.
I'm sure we'll be there next year. I'm not sure how the scheduling is going to work out, but I'm sure we'll be in Provo next year.
I saw a BYU. I was waiting in the bathroom line, which was very long at halftime, and I was standing next to a BYU guy and his son. And they were having a blast, and they were down at half, right, 6 points or whatever. But he was looking around, just like having. They were like, "Man, this is so great." And I started turning around and talking to him. I was like, "Hey, I got to get to Provo." He's like, "Oh, you got to get to Provo." And I go, "What should I come to, a basketball game or a football game first? Because I'd like to come to both." And he paused, and he's like, "Man, that's such a good question. I've never thought about that. Like, what would I tell someone to do?" He's like, "Probably football." I'm like, okay. All right, there you go. Well, come to football. But anyway, we should get out there.
We'll get out to Provo. We'll have some opportunities in this conference here. But all right, Kevin, lots to come. We're going to talk a little bit of football coming up. We're going to get really deep into that Lance Leipold. And, of course, we've got Brian Haney in studio. Maybe we'll talk some football. Maybe we'll talk BYU. But that's all coming up right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back in, Jayhawk Talk Radio, Sports Radio 810 WHB. How about a little football music to get us going? A little palate cleansing from that basketball loss. Let's talk football for just a few minutes here. What do you say?
It's February 29th in the middle of basketball season. It's leap day.
How about
that? They're delaying March a day. So we got some extra time to kill.
You got a little extra time.
Extra time to kill, so we're going to talk a little bit of football right here in the heat of the Big 12 season, a week and a half before.
Who would have thought
the Big 12 tournament starts? We're going to talk about Kansas football.
We haven't done this.
Leap day.
The only time we ever do this is when we have a new coach, about this time.
Why?
Or firing a coach.
So, and just to get back with the theme of how long we've been doing this, some of my favorite episodes, if we're doing like a retrospective, uh-huh, which is, you can do that on 200,
sure,
200 shows together. Some of my favorite episodes have been trying to figure out who the next coach.
Yeah.
Because the way we've done this in the past, for folks who are not familiar with Kevin and I, is that people have their lists, and like, hey, you know, Yahoo Sports will have their list,
sure,
a list of three names to know, and maybe ESPN is like five names to watch. We have consistently, from Charlie Weiss's firing in 2013, the episode after that happens, we've put together 50 candidates.
At least. Yeah.
And we've always been right.
It's just,
they've always been on the list. So those are some of my favorite episodes. But I will relish it even more if we don't have to do that for a long time.
Agreed. And Andrew, we are happy to report that Lance Leipold has agreed to a contract. We don't have the details yet, other than a significant raise for Lance, going from $5 million to $7 million per year. Some of the details will be interesting to see, including any other commitments to sort of recruiting and coach, assistant coach budgets and all that sort of stuff. I suspect he probably got what he wanted in all of that. This is interesting timing. Of course, we saw that. He flirted a little bit, at least the reporting was he flirted a little bit with Washington. And when that contract got done with Jed Fish, it was about $7.5 million, something around there. So you kind of figured when Lance said he was coming back, I'm back, baby, he's probably going to get a raise somewhere in that neighborhood. This makes him in the top 20, Andrew, the top 20 in college football coaching contracts, Lance Leipold.
This puts him right at the market rate. He got what he deserved. He earned this spot. I mean, we're walking into the 2024 season, you know, probably ranked in the 20s-ish in a preseason poll.
A few of them out there have us ranked. Some of them don't.
But we're in that area. We're in the conversation, and this salary certainly puts him in that expectation range. And I think for fans out there, those are not unheard of expectations. Those are not unreasonable expectations. With the team coming back, with the success that the team had last year, you know, finishing at that level is, you know, where we think he should be in terms of, okay, we're going to pay you this way, and here we go. And I think it's not like we just have been cheap with our coaches. I think that there has been some, at least some, we want to pay somebody, but you can't go out and lose zero games and go 0-12 and then make someone the 15th highest paid coach in college football. You got to get there. You got to have some success. And Lance Leipold has certainly had some success. And so this is useful to see. Now, in terms of the years, I don't believe from the reporting that's out there that was released yesterday, the reporting doesn't add any years to his contract. So his contract runs through 2029, so maybe there's your next step. He didn't want to go too early. Give me some more money on my current contract, and then when I get to the college football playoff next year,
mm-hmm,
you know, this that's not too unreasonable to speak out loud and to curse it. That it could potentially be an expectation, or we should be at least in the conversation.
What can I tell you?
When we hit that, then we can give you extra years and extra money.
I like that. Yeah, you want to make sure that you got a little room to grow, right?
Yeah.
You
don't want to be on the top rung with no place to climb once you hit the next level.
That's right. Well, I can just say this, Andrew. Looking at FanDuel over under win loss totals. Have you seen this?
I have. I think there's some value.
8.5 is the number for Kansas.
Now we had 9 last year. The Jayhawks had 9 last year.
When it came out, you could get plus money on over 8.5. I got it at like plus 110. And I bet the over, by the way. Right now, that has dropped. It's now minus 102. So people are betting.
The money's coming in.
The over on KU winning over 8.5 games. And I'll say this, Andrew, when you got this contract for Lance, it is as much about the program that he is building and has built. Think about this. You have 8 of 11 starters coming back on offense. In the NIL transfer market era, and you're talking about Kansas, who should be a feeder school, by the way, by like every metric, should be a feeder school for these top programs to go get more money. Because Kansas football NIL is doing fine, but it is not at the level of some of these other programs. They did not lose guys that you think they might lose. And on defense, they don't have as many returning starters, but they got a lot of the big ones back.
The important ones.
The important, I mean, our defensive backfield is going to be bananas. Those guys could have left, and they did not. And that itself is a sign that Lance is building something. He is obviously, you know, doing the right things by the department, by NIL, by everything else from a metric standpoint. That itself is enough for me to be like, God dang, he's killing it. He is killing it. Recruiting's been great, all that stuff. You can point to all that. But that piece alone is so vital. You can recruit guys. You can get good guys. They're not going to stay in a lot of these programs. They're just not. Because if you're good and you're playing and you're playing well, you could probably double the amount of money you're getting if you go to Alabama. You go to, you know, wherever else you want to go. SEC programs, some of these top Big Ten programs. You will get the money. He got them mostly to stay, and that is huge.
Well, and this is a new era. This is a new era in terms of how teams compete. And so when a new market opens, you need to dominate that new market as early and as fast as possible. True. Otherwise, the whole system, the whole economic system, the whole way the games are played could just change around you. And so if you're getting a time where you need to go all in and you need to establish yourself as, oh, this is a place I can go instead of leave from, you do that early, then you're setting yourself up for success in this next 10, 20-year NIL period before it just becomes another professional league.
And realignment might have helped in some ways with that. Kansas steps into a leadership position within the Big 12 in some degree. And that is wild to think about from a football perspective, but I think true. And, you know, Andrew, there's a reason the guy has won 6 national titles. Now, again, those were Division III titles, but he won 6 of them. It's not crazy to think that if there's anyone out there who can kind of figure this out, navigate this, it's him. He gets it. He seems to get it. And that is, for the coaches we've had in the recent past, a coach who gets it is nice, because I think we've been missing the get it the piece for a while.
It's also Infrastructure Week. It's always Infrastructure Week. Okay, let's talk about Infrastructure Week. The infrastructure that Lance has put in place, and this may be a little inside baseball, but the infrastructure that he's put in place is a lot more expensive than the previous regimes.
For sure.
He's got a lot more recruiting coaches, a lot more analysts behind the scenes looking at the transfer portal, looking at who can bring in, who can, you know, do different things. That staff with Les Miles and with Dave Beatty, very, very small.
It was lean.
Very lean. Now it is very robust.
Yeah.
Those are not free.
But you have to.
You have to.
You have to.
It's Infrastructure Week. And this is part of that. This is putting a flag in the sand saying, hey, this is who we are. We are intending for this program to be top 3 in the Big 12 and in the top 25 in the country.
Yeah. And I'll say, you know, we even mentioned the $450 million investment to a new stadium and to the work that's being done there. We saw, you know, obviously huge props to Travis Goff and his staff and everything they've been doing on that front, and retaining Lance. All of that is a feather in his cap. And I got to say, Andrew, I don't know if you saw it, but the Travis Goff hard hat.
Yeah, I love that.
Did you see the Travis
Goff? I mean,
give Travis, me more Travis Goff.
Travis Goff
series
looks great in a vest. He looks great in a KU polo. He looked a little awkward in the hard hat. So I know, Travis, I know you listen to this show. And as,
loved
as,
it.
As it's the flagship KU fan enterprise.
Sure.
In the area. 200 episodes. But we know Travis has listened forever.
Sure.
So Travis, I'm going to tell you, hey, the hard hat, you know, if you have to, you wear it. But otherwise, I think you're...
I like the hard hat.
You like
it? I liked it. He owned it. He had a little Jayhawk on it. He had a Jayhawk on the back of the vest. He had like the, you know, the light.
They thought about this.
Yeah. Somebody put some thought into it.
That would be a pretty good Halloween costume.
Oh.
Like Travis Goff in a hard hat.
Travis Goff
in a Halloween costume.
Hard hat. I'm in. I like that. He looked good. He sounded good. You could tell he did it in one take. They did a little thing. I mean, he's like, I'm out here, you know, amidst the rubble. Looking at what the future of the stadium's gonna be, so excited about it. You know, he just those little 30-second spot killed it. He killed it. He's great. He's great. He's doing all the right things.
Well, I think that the program is ahead of schedule in terms of where we started.
No kidding.
But I don't know if the stadium will be ahead of schedule.
Well,
I was there on Tuesday, parked right by the rubble,
uh-huh.
The pit over there.
Sure.
Seems like they're still clearing it out a little bit.
A
little bit of work to do, but I hope it stays on schedule. I want to be in that stadium as soon as possible.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun for a lot of years.
It does look awesome. I just can't wait for it to be done.
It's one of the best stadium photos I've ever seen.
It's a great stadium photo.
It's a great stadium photo. The mock-ups that the architecture firm did are great.
Give it all
Let's
to me.
Let's deliver.
Give it all to me.
All right, so I mean, that's where we are. That's where we are with this football program.
Congrats to Lance.
Congrats to him. Congrats to the program. It gets him to stick around. I mean, I think that when you have a coach this talented, we are always going to be dealing with, you know, looking over our shoulders. And I think that Lance is well respected amongst
this helps
amongst media, amongst the power players that look to who are the next big coaches, who are the next leaders of college football. They know he is on that list. So we're always going to be looking over our shoulders. This helps.
Time to support it. Get out there, buy tickets.
What we want
support
this,
NIL.
What we
Keep
want this
here.
Program to be. All right, Kevin, we're going to come back. We're going to get back to basketball.
Time for basketball talk again?
It's Leap Day. We're going to have a couple random conversations. And the preeminent conversation in college basketball right now, it was Caitlin Clark for a little while. It is no longer Caitlin Clark. It's tangential to Caitlin Clark, but it's court storming. Get ready for...
Can't wait for this.
I want to hear... You and I have not talked about this. But I know you've got some fiery takes on court storming. I've got some thoughts.
Okay.
Well, want to talk around some things. So stay back for the best court storming segment on any, because everyone's doing it. This will be the best one.
The best one.
The best court storming segment on any radio program in the country, I guarantee it, is coming up right here. Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We're back on Jayhawk Talk Radio, and we're here to talk court storming.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is a great court storming song, by the way. Like, this is a song that might go through your head when it's like, 3, 2, 1, and just like...
When you're running onto the floor, you want to just go run into a Duke player. Like, this
just,
is what's going through your
just
brain.
Just clothesline a Dukie. That is what I think of, yeah.
This is what's going on. So, I mean, we have this radio program. We've had this show for 200 episodes,
200
Kevin.
200 episodes.
And I think that you and I can talk basketball. We can talk X's and O's. We know the development and the historical development of offenses and how offenses – you know, function. We know we can see actions. We can see defensive structures. We can talk about that. But we're not good at talking about that. We're best talking about this stuff.
Oh, for sure.
We're best talking about court storming and the all the fun stuff of college basketball. So we're going to talk about X's and O's later. We're going to talk about, you know, sagging on KJ and the implications that has on the offensive structure. We're going to talk about that later. Right now, we're going to talk about court storming.
I can't wait.
So this conversation and the national conversation on this topic stems from a week ago where it was the Dukies playing against Wake Forest in Wake Forest. And Wake Forest, you know, they've been a up and down program, mostly down in recent memory.
Yeah, but historically kind of a
but historically better, you know, and they've got a good, you know, new coach. newish coach that's looking to build that program. Yep. And they get a signature win against one of the top programs in the ACC. It's good for their fans. And we know this from our perspective because we're in a similar boat to the Blue Devils, that when you lose on the road, 9 times out of 10 for a program like that, the court's going to get stormed by the fans.
Correct.
And it's happened several times this year. I think every game we've lost away, there's been a court storming, except for K-State. Is that correct? Yeah, except for K-State. And they wanted to. That's the one time that
they did want to.
The security actually kind of worked and kind of deterred, and the players, I think, and Tang kind of put everybody like
they were trying to keep them off. Tang keeps saying, you know, hey, we expect to win, blah blah.
But they wanted to. So we've been a part of this several times this year, you know, especially UCF, West Virginia. We don't need to go through all the. Oh, Iowa State did not rush, but. It's what happens when a blue blood gets beat by a program that's looking for a signature win. And that's what happened with Wake Forest last week. The difference between that and other games is that Kyle Filipowski maybe got into it. I mean, I don't want to, like, I'm not
going to
accuse that he instigated it, but he did not have necessarily the urgency to get off the floor.
Not a lot of urgency.
Not that he is expected to.
You shouldn't have to.
But he didn't have that urgency, and there may have been a little scuffle. There may have been a little, and he fell down and
Allegedly got hurt.
He will be fine. He's playing.
He played. He's fine.
He played yesterday.
It was the most Duke thing ever, by the way.
Yeah, it comes out about, you know, John Shire gets, you know, pearl clutching. There's a lot of Jay Billis pearl clutching, Seth Greenberg on ESPN pearl clutching. But this topic, Kevin, is loaded with hypocrisy.
Okay.
Loaded with hypocrisy from everybody. Because if you remember early September, the Duke Blue Devils beat the Clemson Tigers in football. And what did they do? They rushed the field, and their coach, Mike Elko, said, this is a great moment for our football program.
As fast as you can.
Not the fact that they won the game, but the fact that the fans, this is great for our fans. They're on the field, and everybody's so happy. So there's contrasting interests here, Kevin. Contrasting interests are, one, it's so fun.
It's a lot of fun. Have you done
it?
It's fun.
I've done it. In football.
On a football field.
In football.
Yeah.
Basketball, we can be high and mighty about that. We would never rush the court.
It is easy for KU to be like, you shouldn't really rush
the court. Yeah, so like as blue blood fans as we are, our opinion probably should be, we shouldn't be rushing the court.
Sure.
I don't get that's probably either of our opinions.
It's wild to me when all of those folks that you mentioned have employers, you know, whatever, ESPN, CBS. What is the thing that they can't wait to show at the end of a game like that? That's on replays and it's on SportsCenter. Here they come, right? And they're celebrating in the middle of the floor and all this. They are obviously not cutting away. It's not a streaker. Like, they're not sending the cameras to look elsewhere. It is right at it because it's awesome. And people at home like to see it. It's cool. It's fun to be there if you're in person. Get out of the way. It's fun. Like, get out of the way. It's fun. So what I got to say, there should be ways we can maybe make it a little more safe. Sure. Fine. But even Bill Self, Andrew, have you seen his quote on this?
I do, and I disagree with him a little bit.
I do, too. It's okay to disagree.
You know, his opinion was that it should be banned. It's becoming too dangerous, and he's right. He's right that it is dangerous. He is right.
Remember the Jamari trailer incident?
Yes. Jamari got knocked around by a K-State player.
Jamari could have killed that young man.
And he would have been well within his rights to do
with
so.
With one small strike of a fist, could have killed that young man. I can't remember his name.
And honestly, there was some hubbub about that, but it didn't reach this level.
No, it was fine, whatever.
It did not reach this level. So here we are. We've got some. And Jay, I love Jay Billis. I think he's one of the best commentators, but he's coming at it from his legal perspective. He is a lawyer, as are we.
Technically lawyers, yes.
Technically, and he comes at it with, just arrest them.
Just arrest
them. Keep everybody on the court and detain them all and cite them all. And here's what I think is the fundamental misunderstanding of what's happening, Jay Billis, is that they're not supposed to be on the court. You tell them not to be on the court and they don't listen. You tell them to be on the court and don't leave. Do you think they're going to listen?
Adios.
They could leave just as easily as they got on there.
Play Blitzkrieg Bop again and it'll just be the same thing.
Your guys in your yellow jackets trying to keep them from leaving? Are you kidding me? There's probably 3,000-4,000 people and you've got 30 dudes in yellow jackets trying to keep them from leaving so you can arrest them? It doesn't work that way. Mass crowds. Don't work that way. Nope. This is a unique societal thing where it's literally herd mentality. It is a herd of people coming your way, and there's more of them than there are of you. What are you going to do about it?
And you know it, by the way. You know it's going to happen. That's the thing here. Like, it's not like it's a surprise.
It's a buzz. It's a feeling.
You know it's going to happen. So as a player and a coach, you know what's going to happen. So what do you do? You instruct your guys to get the heck out of the way.
You do your best to manage it. And I think there could be some rule changes that I would be okay with that allow maybe the referee to take a little bit more control in those situations.
They can do that.
So if there's 10 seconds left and the game is out of control, let's call an administrative timeout to get everybody. And I think that's okay. Seth Greenberg comes in with this suggestion. You have a 1-minute grace period. I don't know what that means.
Who would have loved to have more court stormings?
He would still be employed at Virginia Tech if there were more court stormings. If they were to beat Duke every year, they storm the court. Then he would still be employed at Virginia Tech. Okay, and then he also says so there's a 1-minute grace period. Home team goes into the student section. I don't know what that means. And then a $1,000 school fine for court storming, or $1 million. Excuse me, $1 million school fine for court storming. Still not going to work.
No.
Like, you can't just... It's got to be a culture...
You can't price your way out of it. College kids don't give a crap about $1 million fine.
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
Maybe it's in the interest of the university to avoid it.
Sure.
But the students don't care.
But then it's just not going to be fun. They're going to have, they're going to put, they're going to roll out barbed wire. Like, what are they going to do to try to keep the $1 million fine off? Like, it's just silly.
Do you remember, to get back to football here, do you remember that there was a concerted effort amongst the athletic administration to get rid of the vulgar phrase that was said after kickoffs?
Rip their bleeping heads off?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
sure.
The more that they tried to find ways to change it, it just made it worse.
Just made it worse.
So
college kids have a way of just doing what they want to do. And if there's an authority saying that they shouldn't do that, they're going to do that even more. Like, that's the thing. When you tell a college kid, don't do that, what do you think they're going to do?
They're going to do it.
Especially with a big group. They're going to do it.
They're defiant. They're 18, 19, 20 years old. If you tell them, don't storm the court.
I've never stormed a court, though. I will say this unequivocally. I've never stormed a court. Have I stormed a football field? As many times as I can count. I can't even tell you how many times I've stormed a football field.
They are very memorable. And so students really grasp onto that in terms of they want a memory of to commemorate what happened.
Sure.
And so even when we were slightly older, I think we were in our mid-30s, there's a Texas Tech game, I think. We randomly
won.
You and I were out there. It's fine. It wasn't quite the same. I remember when I was 19 years old and we beat Missouri.
Oh, yeah. That was a fast one.
Beat Brad Smith, and I was in the front row.
That was a fast storming.
There was no way I was avoiding that.
Yeah.
I had to go.
Yeah.
I had to jump that fence and get on the field because there was no other place to go. So anyway, I think the best way to change that is kind of work within what the crowd wants to do, have some rules to create some safety, have the refs get involved at the end of the game if the game is out of reach to prevent that from happening, prevent safety issues from happening. Otherwise, you can invent all these rules. I don't think it's going to change anything.
Not going to change anything. And think of it as a little bit of a badge of honor. Just a little bit. If you are upset on the road, they think so highly of you.
Right. If you are a Duke team and you lose on the road and they storm the court, they're not doing that for Vandy. They're not doing that if Alabama comes in.
What you should be more worried about is that they stop storming the court on you.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's when you know you're not there anymore. So, hey, just keep understanding that if you're there, it's a badge of honor, and get out of the way.
Okay. That was it, Kevin. That was the best court storming
segment.
Probably
the best court storming
segment in radio that's ever been done, and I think it's the right opinion. Right?
Absolutely.
All right, we've got Brian Haney in studio, voice of the Kansas Jayhawks coming up next. We're going to have him. We're going to talk maybe some Jayhawks, maybe some football, maybe some Leipold news. Lots to talk about with Brian Haney right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Back in the Jayhawk Talk Radio on Sports Radio 810 WHB. This song always makes my tummy hurt a little bit. I don't know about you guys. It's always the song that kind of introduces you to March and gets you a little fired up. Andrew, we are joined in studio by the voice of the Jayhawks and friend of ours, friend of the program, Brian Haney. Brian, welcome in.
Great to see you guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
It is that special time of year. And probably I associate feelings of anticipation and excitement, but your description of it makes my tummy hurt a little bit when that song comes on. I know that feeling too. And I know there have been certain years where once we went out, whether that was in the second round or the Elite Eight or whatever, I just couldn't force myself to watch any of the rest of the tournament because I was so heartbroken.
Absolutely.
So yeah. There are definite, I guess, tense vibes with that song. But more than anything, I just think about Selection Sunday.
Sure.
And all the possibility that awaits. And yeah. That's a pretty magical comeback song right there. Thanks very much for that.
Absolutely.
Brian, I don't know if you know this, but this is Kevin and I's 200th show together.
No way.
Whether that's podcast or radio. And I think you've probably been part of 10% of those.
I'll take it.
We're making you do a lot of the work for us.
The watch is in the mail.
Including today. So we appreciate you being with us. And
this explains the bikini girl in the cake that just popped out a second ago.
Yeah, that was supposed to be later, but you know, they heard you were coming and wanted to make a special exception.
But let's get into it. We can reminisce, or we can kind of talk about Tuesday's game against BYU. And there's a lot to get to. Obviously, not the outcome that we wanted. You called that game, and I just want to give you a statistic here. You've been calling games for the Jayhawks for this is your eighth season.
Correct.
Okay, I went back and I looked at all the losses that you've called in Allen Fieldhouse. Do you know how many that is?
Gosh, I would guess maybe six or seven.
It's nine.
Nine?
It's more than I thought.
We had one year where we rattled off three in a span of about a month.
Right.
Which was crazy because that was the year they started charting these on the wall inside the locker room.
Oh,
self-dominance in the field house.
Oh, no.
And they never had to update the number on the right side of the column until that particular stretch.
Whoops.
And then, you know, the poor equipment guy was coming in there every other day and I'm thinking, was this a bad idea? Did we jinx this by creating this wall? Okay, so it's nine.
It's nine. Okay, so we have an overtime game against Iowa State your first season.
Okay.
You have Arizona State.
Oh, Remy game.
Remy killed us.
Yeah, we were in the front row for that game. He just kept looking straight at us every time he made a shot.
Yeah,
I hated that guy.
I hated Remy until he became our guy. But like,
I love Remy.
I had feelings on Remy Martin because of that game. Then I think you're talking about 2018. This is Texas Tech by 12, and you have Oklahoma State. We lost that game, and I believe that's around when Malik Newman started to heat up. And then, you know, we have won Baylor in 2020. You know, that was that back and forth. We won there, and they won in Allen Fieldhouse.
That was their first time, because we always used to say that Scott Drew had more losses in the
Fieldhouse
than Bill Self did.
You have Texas in 21. You have a Kentucky blowout. You have TCU last year, and then BYU.
There you go.
On Tuesday. So not very many.
I remember the Texas Tech one vividly because when I was the voice of the Red Raiders, like going into the field house, you just expected to get a nod on your head and a 25-point L. And our coach my first year, who was the interim coach when Billy Gillespie had to step away, Chris Walker was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And Tech, for some reason, with seemingly great regularity, always got scheduled on senior night. And Walker famously said, getting scheduled at Allen Fieldhouse for senior night is like walking into a lion's den wearing a meat necklace.
Meat necklace, yeah.
And how many times do we have to endure those?
But
I remember that one because as the Tech announcer, it felt like it would never happen that they would win an Allen Fieldhouse. And then they did a few years later when I was on the other side. Same with Baylor. Same with TCU. You know, TCU had gotten us in the Big 12 tournament before. They'd gotten us down there. We all remember the YMCA quote, right?
Topeka.
Yeah, exactly. top city. We can relate to that. But yeah, they do stick out, and I'm still so proud of the fact that, you know, Bill Self has a 95% home court winning percentage.
Wow.
So proud of the fact that there's only 18 of those all time in 21 seasons. That's unreal. But Tuesday night was an example of a game that, even shorthanded without a midseason first-team All-American, you have to win that game when you've got a 12-point lead early in the second half. You're getting a favorable whistle. You're in the double bonus with a little under 14 minutes to go in regulation.
I can't remember a time that I've seen that.
Exactly. And I saw some stats on social media later that night about it had been over 11 years since we had held a lead at home inside of 5 minutes to go and didn't win that game.
Yeah.
The ways in which Kansas almost always seems to close out an opponent in the fog just didn't happen. And it was BYU that showed more poise, and obviously their three-point game plan finally started to click.
Yep.
They're now 20-2 when they shoot better than 32% from three. So even though they had a spell of 0-8 at one point and 0-6 for another, droughts like that usually cause teams to stop shooting the three.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Pope's strategy is just keep slinging it. And eventually they kept hitting them, and then 13 threes later, our night was sealed.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. I don't remember one like it in memory where it looked like this was going to be a mismatch, right? It looked like we had KJ early was just a complete mismatch. I didn't know what to do with him, and then he just did not have a good second half. Hunter did not have a good second half. But basically, no one had a good second half. But yeah. it was a game where, you know, they make 13 and you make three threes. That's a not great place to start. And I didn't love, you know, they reacted to our game plan better than we reacted to theirs.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And I don't know if that's a, you know, you can. We talked a little bit about it. Was that a coaching thing? Was that an adjustment thing? Or was that just an execution thing? And it felt like they just executed way better than we did. We switching five, getting Hunter, and then looking for your spot, and they double team the post, kick out. I mean, it was textbook. I mean, they were textbook in the second half, and we weren't. We missed a lot of shots, and that's a good recipe to lose.
It really is. You know, Coach Self knew, obviously, you're going to get outscored from three, and we outscored them points in the paint-wise by about 20, I believe.
Yep.
You've got it in front of you, Andrew. But, you know, you get outscored by 30 from three. He was hoping that number would be closer to 15 to 20 additional points from BYU from three. But this is a team that's now hit 10-plus threes in 19 of their 28 games. Kansas has hit 10-plus threes twice.
I was going to say, it can't be very many.
You want to guess the two games? You got to go all the way back to the first week of the
November.
Season.
I was going
to
say.
It was game one and game two.
Because I remember in the offseason, we were like, oh, this team's not a three-point shooting team. And then they start off so hard, we're like, maybe we were wrong.
Well, and that was when Hunter was nailing them. And yep. That was when Kevin was going nuts early.
Totally. Yep. But it was also NC Central and it was Manhattan College.
Right.
Well.
But to your point, Hunter Dickinson, in the first 6 weeks or so, we thought we had a real weapon from downtown. When he was throwing in threes at the United Center versus Kentucky and then making gestures that we can't describe on air, walking to the locker room, we thought, holy smokes, not only is this guy a walking double-double, but he's shooting close to 50% from three, and at that point, over a month-plus sample size, it felt sustainable. Guys, before the three he hit on Tuesday to tie it 66 all, he'd hit three for his last 28.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Every time he shoots it and he gets squared up, you still think it's
going
in. It
looks good.
It looks good. And this guy puts in a lot of work before and after practice to get that stroke down, which is why he still has the green light. But this has now been a just as long stretch without them falling as the stretch we had at the start of the year when you thought you had a weapon there. And, you know, to further punctuate that point, obviously we thought Nick Timberlake was going to be a baller from three. He scored so many times last year from beyond the arc. He hit in 220 attempts at Towson, he shot 42%. Now he's down to, I believe, 26% at Kansas,
yeah.
So 16 percentage points less. And that was over a huge sample size last year. His confidence, clearly, even though it's on an uptick overall, getting a little bit better defensively, obviously making some nice aggressive driving
sure.
finishes. We all know about the SportsCenter top 10 plays in Stillwater and versus Texas. But here we are 4 months into the season, and they still aren't falling from three. And that's specifically what he was brought in here to do. And I love the kid. He works really hard. He's liked amongst his teammates. He hits them at practice. But there's, sadly, just something about when there's butts in the seats and popcorn popping, those threes aren't falling for Nick. And now a four-month sample size.
It's getting bigger.
Of a 16 percentage point drop from what he was a year ago is alarming, and that gives you a little bit of pause in thinking, could there be a Remy-like postseason injection of something off the bench? I just don't know. But I love the kid, and he's trying hard, and he was our pregame guest on Tuesday talking about confidence and talking about settling in and how much more comfortable do you feel, and then we get a 1 of 9 after that, and so obviously it's tough, man. And so you take out Kevin, Hunter's falling off in terms of threes, Nick's falling off in terms of threes, and I was just doing the math today because after I talk with you guys, I'm heading over to KCTV5, and they want to interview me about the last five Final Four teams, and I agreed to do the interview so long as they include 2018, because even though the banner came down, we were all still there.
I saw it.
We lived it. We beat Duke in Omaha in the Elite
Eight. Felt very real.
It happened. and so I was doing the math, and that team hit 391 threes that year.
They had a lot of threes.
Svi and Devonte had the first and third greatest individual three-point seasons of all time. And to give you a little peek behind the curtain in play-by-play, when you're making, you know, 12 to 13 threes a game as the play-by-play guy, you want to make sure you're mixing your metaphors and coming up with at least 10 different ways to say it's good.
It's good.
He hit it. He takes a three. Right. He makes a three. Drill, swish, bang, you know, all that. And we would get to halftime when we play the first half highlights back, and I would be writing down the descriptions that I said because we were hitting them so frequently.
If only, right?
You didn't want to use
like a terrible problem to have, right?
You didn't want to use the same term twice. And so I actually did something that season. Nobody knows this. I pulled a page out of Jacques Vaughn's book. You remember he used to wear a rubber band on his wrist?
Uh-huh.
And every time he'd make a turnover, he'd snap himself. I started wearing a rubber band, and if I used the same metaphor with that particular team that was hitting 400 threes, if I used it the same time twice and a half, I'd smack myself.
That's hilarious. I love that.
This particular Kansas team, there's been no rubber
band. No rubber band necessary. Hopefully that changes. Hopefully we
hopefully
get bring so. The rubber band. What we need to do is bring the rubber bands back and just have everyone have a rubber band and then just a team of rubber bands. I mean, that might help something. There was something there with Jacques for sure. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Single sheet of paper.
I was wearing a rubber band in basketball because of Jacques Vaughn wearing a rubber band in basketball. Yes. I do remember
that. Self-discipline. We need to bring that back.
That's right.
All right. We're going to take a break real quick. We're going to be back with Brian Haney. Lots more to talk about. We're just talking about Kevin McCuller. Talk about Johnny Furphy. Story of the season.
Yeah.
And then maybe some football. Maybe some Lance Leipold.
Let's do it.
Get Brian's take on the new extended contract. Okay. We'll be back with Brian right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back in, Jayhawk Talk Radio, Sports Radio 810 WHB, joined in studio by the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney. Brian, thanks for sticking around for one more segment.
Of course.
Really appreciate you being here. Loved that Jacques Vaughn anecdote from the last segment. I'm going to remember that one. I'm going to start wearing a rubber band just to work. Something goes wrong, just to remind myself.
Totally.
Yeah.
Every time you say something like "circle back,"
yeah,
or we need some corporate talk.
Yeah, corporate talk. Yeah, I like
smack
that
on the wrist.
Like there might be something there. No one will get it, but that will be my only thing. So we've got some stories of the season so far still developing, and I think one thing that you know, after the game last night. A little bit Jekyll and Hyde from that Texas game. So you saw the ceiling. You saw what they can be. They saw they can beat literally anyone in college basketball. We've seen that all year long. They have won against very tough teams, the best in the country, and they've lost games. Obviously, they shouldn't have lost. Let's talk about ceiling for a minute for this team now. Obviously, and I think that the key question is ceiling with and without McCuller.
Sure.
Because I think that's the way that we have to think about this the rest of the way. We've talked in here in our shows this year about you got the best starting five in college basketball. At least you can put it up against anybody. That's the starting five with Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And the ceiling there throughout March, you get right, you get a little hot on three, you start, you know, that there was a very, very high ceiling for that team. So I think that still exists, right? Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Assuming Kevin gets back and, you know, whenever that is, hopefully sometime for a March run, that exists. In the world where he does not, though, talk about the ceiling for this team and what needs to happen for us to be, you know, to take it to that level.
Well, I think there's actually a third tier to that question, too, and it's which version of Kevin. So if Kevin comes back and it's November, December Kevin, that the Athletic listed as a mid-season first-team All-American, scoring 20 a game, shooting in the upper 30% from three, much more efficient, getting to the stripe 10 times a game, and hitting at 80-plus percent from the free-throw line, if it's that Kevin, then yes, what Jay Billis and Jay Williams and Reese Davis and everybody on that game day crew said just 3 weeks ago in the fog that this is the best starting five in America, hands down, that's absolutely still your destiny and reality with suddenly a little more faith in the bench. Because despite what we just said about Nick's continued struggles from three, there's no doubt Self trusts him more today than he did this time 2 weeks ago. And the same can be said for Al Marco. So if you get Kevin back, which version of Kevin is he, and how long does it take for him to reacclimate? Coach Self has said and gone out of his way to say in the last week that this group without Kevin moves the ball a little bit better, and he's hinting at the fact that sometimes the ball would stick a bit.
Yep.
And
I agree with that.
Yeah. But there's no doubt, guys, we need Kevin to reach our optimal potential. We can say, hey, man, they're sharing it better and there's more flow and all that without Kevin. But if Kevin plays on Tuesday night versus BYU, as a guy that for three consecutive seasons has been at least a semifinalist for the Naismith National Defensive Player of the Year Award, you can't convince me that their 13 three-point makes don't drop to at least 10.
Yeah.
And that's 9 points off the total. We win the game. You can't tell me we don't win that game with Kevin, just based on the defensive end alone, let alone the scoring punch he brings offensively. And I'd like to think on a night where Hunter couldn't have thrown it in the ocean from the free throw line, that if it's McCullough at the free throw line taking those 15 attempts, you're hitting at least 10 of them. But you got to get the version of Kevin we had in the first 2 months, and not a guy that has labored to score and really struggled with efficiency ever since the bone bruise happened. But for this particular group, since that's where you finished the question, you know, without Kevin, what do they look like in the immediate future, and should it be an extended absence? Hey, you still have one of the best 5 to 10 point guards in the country. You still have a post presence that, let's say Tuesday night was an anomaly and Hunter can at least be a 70% free throw shooter who's going to score close to 50% of his post touches, not including the threes that he's been missing a lot of. You've still got a great weapon there that's a premier interior post player, a great Robin to his Batman and KJ Adams, who Bill Self thinks should be eligible to win Big 12 Most Improved Player in back-to-back years. It's never happened. It won't happen. But he has taken that next step this year after taking a ton of steps last year. You still have Johnny Furphy, who's your best pro prospect on this team and continues to ascend upward at a very rapid rate. So there's a lot to love about this group, no doubt. With a little more depth now than what you had this time a month ago, I just don't see a deep, deep run without McCullough unless you get consistent three-point shots starting to fall, unless you see Hunter Dickinson put this team on his back. And DeJuan Harris, you know, last night was a bit of a step back, but otherwise for the last 8 games heading into last night, he was playing on a completely different level. In March, when point guard play is of paramount importance, we need a special chemistry between Harris and Dickinson. We need what Hunter was tweeting about when he first committed and said, Juan, get set to average 10 assists a game. We need Hunter to be much more automatic, and we need Juan to be able to feed him with almost unstoppable regularity. Let me give you these numbers on Juan prior to Tuesday. Over the last month, and this goes back to a conversation he and I had the day the Bob Cousy top 10 list came out, and some unbelievable self-awareness, no pun intended, out of DeJuan here in an era where there's a lot of focus on individualism, not just awards. I'm talking about personal brand. I'm talking about NIL. I'm talking about all that. I asked Juan in a complimentary sense, hey, congratulations. You've made the Bob Cousy top 10 for the second straight year. And he looked at me and he said, yeah, I saw that. He's like, but I haven't been even close to as good this year as I've been in previous years, specifically last year when I was also on the list. This was late January. This was after the Cincinnati game, before the Iowa State game. And here's a kid, 23 years old, aware enough that, hey, I just got an accolade, but I'm not tweeting it out bragging about myself. I'm recognizing that I've been okay, but I could be so much better. Yeah. And quite frankly, at that point in the season, KJ was much better than he was a year ago. Kevin was much better than he was a year ago. Hunter was about what we thought he would be. And in terms of the returning players, everybody had taken a step except for Juan.
Yep.
Since then, heading into this week, He raised his field goal percentage to a 56% shooting number in the last month. Assist-to-turnover ratio is 4-1, which would easily lead the Big 12 and be top five nationally. And then go ask Max Asemus how good of a defender DeJuan Harris is. All the while, he's shutting guys down on the other end. So I say that to say, prior to Tuesday when he had four first-half turnovers, he'd been really, really good. He needs to be elite in March. Hunter needs to be dominant in March. And we need to have some kind of pulse from the perimeter, if we're playing without Kevin, to keep defenses from clamping down on Hunter. You got to be able to spread the floor, which means Furphy's corner pocket three balls need to come back. We can't have 0 for 5.
Yep.
Timberlake's got to do better than 1 for 9. And if we do get Kevin back, which I personally still think we will at the time of this conversation, I really feel like this Kansas team still has everything in front of it. It set out to achieve sans a Big 12 regular season title. But as the program that has the most conference championships of anybody, and I still quote 64, not 63 for the record.
Of course.
It's 64.
Of a program that has the most, so many that we hang 9 years per banner, not an individual banner per year. We're okay with winning those, but we understand that legacy and immortalized teams are teams that are remembered for what they did in March and April, not January and February. And so for this particular group, even though a lot of our expectations have been stunted a bit, and right now there's big questions based on Kevin's availability and all that, if they still put it all together and they get November, December Kevin back, that version of McCullough, this club can absolutely still win it all, which is what they set out to do anyway when this roster was first assembled way back in April of last year. It's taken a different path, certainly starting with the loss of Arterio Morris, and there's been way less margin for error than ever before, going back to maybe the 2012 season. But everything is still within reach for these guys if you can get your main horse back, and I'm hopeful that's going to be the case.
Let's talk a little bit about Johnny Furphy. Johnny Furphy is our favorite subject to talk about on this show. You know, came from he's got a likable story, right? He's a likable guy, kind of an underdog coming into it. Now suddenly is the alpha dog in terms of NBA draft stock and, you know, will he or won't he? Like, we didn't anticipate to have this conversation of will he or won't he with him. It maybe be somebody else. So talked about Johnny Furphy and how you've seen him develop and sort of what you think his future is going to be either here or just like what kind of player he's going to be, you know, at the next level.
Well, I'm so excited about his future, and yet I'm still both selfishly and not selfishly or unselfishly thinking that he would benefit a ton by coming back next year and continuing to build on his frame with an extra season working with Ramsey Nijem, our strength coach who used to be with the Sacramento Kings, an extra season of Bill Self's tutelage on defensive principles, toughness, all these things. A season of being what you just described as the alpha dog. He would be the alpha wing scorer on next year's team.
Maybe in the country. Maybe in the country.
I mean, certainly like, one of the faces of the Big 12, maybe one of the faces of college basketball nationwide next year if he came back. And I think he would grow so much more as a player with the ball in his hands, playing 35 minutes a game, taking the big shots in crunch time, fighting for the key stops with the game on the line versus being the 14th guy at the end of the bench, going back and forth on a contract that has some games in the G League and some games up at the NBA level. We all know in the NBA, your duration and longevity as well as your prosperity all has to do with can you get that second contract and what is it worth? His readiness next year would be so much greater if he had a full season after this one collegiately, and then he's asked to go guard LeBron James. Can you imagine Johnny Furphy trying to guard grown men on a nightly basis in the NBA right now? He'd hold his own because he's scrappy and he's tough and he sticks his nose in there, but there's a lot he still has to learn defensively that if you just snap your fingers and throw him in on a Tuesday night in Chicago against the Lakers and he's trying to wall up on somebody like that, I think we'd find out really fast this is still a 19-year-old kid and the world's coming at you really fast.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So love Johnny. I love his length. I love his hustle. There's nothing more exciting for me on a season void of three-point makes, as we discussed earlier, than to see that kangaroo hop in and jump over everybody. And I use that since the fans call him Captain Kangaroo.
Sure.
But hop in over everybody.
Lovingly.
towering in for those offensive rebounds. Yeah. He just comes soaring in. And on a team where obviously KJ's rebounding isn't all that it could be, and Hunter's a good rebounder, but he's not super athletic. The vertical leap will not be wowed when he goes to the combine one day. To see the way Johnny gets us extra possessions, and then to see when we get him in the open floor, when he makes those aggressive drives to the rim, I mean, wow, that's exciting. To me, as impressive as his three-point stroke was earlier in this stretch of now 13 games consecutively as a starter, they've always said his ability to score off the bounce and drive it will be his long-term best attribute. And the shot, though very much prevalent, at least in certain stretches, is really secondary for him. As he becomes more consistent at both, there's the complete player that becomes the Big 12 Player of the Year candidate next season, that becomes a lottery pick next season. I know The Athletic wrote just last week he's up to 13th. That's wild to me because just 6 weeks ago he was 7th on our roster. Now you're telling me he's 13th on the world's roster? That's hard to fathom. I know it's a weak draft class, and I'm not hating on his draft stock. If it's the right time, we encourage our guys to go. And for some guys, it's the right time. But this happens to be an interesting case where the next 4 to 5 weeks will determine a lot. And if we make a run all the way to Phoenix, he probably is
gone.
But if he doesn't, and we don't, I think it would behoove him because a lot more mocksters have him in that 22 to 29 range. And if you're late first round and there's a chance you're not first round, boy, I'd love to see him come back.
Sure.
Put himself in a much more fortuitous position the next season come NBA combine and draft time to be talked about as a lock for the top 10, maybe top 5. I know it's a deeper class in 2025, but he would be much more NBA ready. And again, it's all about the second contract.
Well, give us a you got to get out of here. You got to go do a fancy TV spot, you know, like you're talking. It's slumming it here on the radio, guys. So you got to go.
This is more fun, man. You guys are my OGs from Top City.
Appreciate you. Give us one quick anecdote from the road this year. Something fun that happened. Something behind the scenes. Give I know I kind of put you on the spot, but something that happened that might give us a peek behind the curtain. Either what you do, what the team's up to. Something that you can share on the radio.
Right?
The fun ones are probably ones you can't, but if you got something fun, maybe something Gurley did, whatever. Something that will give us a fun smile on the way out.
Man, that is such a great question. I wish I had more time to think about it because two stories immediately popped to mind, both involving Gurley, both not fit for
not
radio.
Not fit for radio. Dang it. See, that's the problem.
And I'll tell them to you as soon as we go to break and the microphones are turned off. But in a fun way. I don't want to get Greg in trouble.
Understood.
Or anything.
Understood.
Got that personality that's probably more PG-13 or R than
it
is.
Yeah, well, you know.
Jayhawk Talk Radio is a family program.
That's right. Now, Jayhawk Talk Podcast, anything goes. On the radio, we got to be careful.
There's certain FCC guidelines we have to stay within.
That's right.
Boy, that's a tough one because, to be honest, trips out on the road this season have not been that fun for us once the game days have hit. But we've always had a rule ever since my first year as voice of the Jayhawks going back to 2016. And we started this particularly with football. We can't control the outcome the next day. So by golly, we're going to make it a successful trip the night before by going out and about and making a memory somewhere.
There you go.
When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Eat at the local place.
Sure.
Go see the local entertainment, whatever it may be.
Yeah,
and so we always try to make a memory. And some years at the Maui Invitational, Steve Kincaid, our engineer, and I, we went surfing the day before the game.
Awesome.
And we'll always have that memory. This year, when we went to Puerto Rico, we went on a rainforest hike.
Sweet.
Now, Gurley was sipping Mai Tais at the pool, but we went on a rainforest hike. That was probably cool. We climbed to the top of this mountain in San Juan where there's a castle at the top.
Cool.
And that was amazing. But usually the stories involve Greg and they're hilarious. I just can't tell the two in particular from this year. But invite me back if we have another Final Four run and I bet I'll have something a little more fit for you
episode. We will 100% do that. Thank you for joining us in studio. It's been great fun. Good to see you as always. Have a great call this weekend. Once you go down there and make a memory for us, we could use a win on the road.
Man, wouldn't that be special?
It's tough to get him in Waco, but I think this team needs it.
They do. And excited to see their new arena.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the new TV angle.
It's
from
terrible.
Up on top. It's like you're looking straight down from a helicopter. But we'll try to bring you a vivid picture right here on 810 WHB, your Kansas City home for the Jayhawks. Guys, congratulations on 200 episodes.
Hey,
thank you.
Yeah.
I'm honored to be a part of at least 20 of those. And you can enjoy the lady in the cake now.
Awesome.
Oh, there's balloons and confetti. It's coming down now. This
Dubs,
is amazing.
Fireworks, everything.
Thanks to Brian. You can hear the call right here on WHB on Saturday at noon. Is that what it is? Saturday noon?
Yes.
Down there in Waco. Perfect. Well, we're going to be back. We got more Jayhawk basketball to unpack. We've got some prop bets Kevin and I put together for to kind of direct our betting life for the next couple weeks. You know, maybe we'll close out with something fun. So stick around right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Let's go. Look, welcome to the Big 12.
Welcome to the Big 12. The energy and T-Mobile. We got the hit song by PL that everyone knows, of course. Hot on the radio. This is the
It will be soon.
This is the Big 12 song that your Mark commissioned for last year's Big 12 tournament. I am curious, will we get a different Big 12 song, or is this like the forevermore Big 12 song? It is evergreen.
Would you mess with perfection?
That's a great question. Why would you mess with perfection? This, I don't know if this is perfection, though.
I don't know. Sure. It'll be, I am excited. Okay, so Big 12 tournament starts a week from Tuesday.
Correct.
So, because the games go earlier now, because there's Tuesday. There's the danger we could potentially play on Wednesday, depending on how the season wraps up. The quarterfinals.
What a travesty.
Quarterfinals on Thursday, semifinals on Friday, finals on Friday. So, on Saturday. So, here we go. I'm excited to see what Yormark does for his second year at the helm of the Big 12 tournament. He did some shake-up things last year, including this song.
This song?
This song.
Fat Joe.
Fat Joe. Shaq.
Shaq was there.
Shaq was there. They had some you know.
They haven't released it yet. Have they released any details about the Big 12?
I am waiting.
Yeah.
I am with bated breath. Like, Yormark, what are you going to
do? What are you going to do this year? You got to warm up.
They also had like a fashion line collaboration, which I didn't ever seen.
And don't forget the foods. Every team had its own food item inside the Sprint.
T-Mobile.
Whatever it's called. Hey, so speaking of Big 12, you glossed over this quickly, but I got to come back. You mentioned there's a chance the Jayhawks have to play early.
Mm-hmm.
In the Big 12 tournament.
So structurally, for those of you who are not aware, the bottom four teams
play Tuesday.
Have to play Tuesday.
Tuesday night.
Then those four teams will play the next four teams on Wednesday, which could include a 5 or 6 seeded Kansas Jayhawks.
We should not be anywhere near that, and here we are potentially worried that we're going to have to play on a Wednesday of the Big 12 tournament.
And then you'd play one of the top four.
It's
on
not
Thursday.
It's if not you were to crazy win. To think that KU is going to play on Wednesday. In fact, right now I think KenPom, who is a fraud, has us right there, right? Because he projects, and I think he frankly most would project KU as a one. We got three games left.
Lose both on the road.
1-2, right? You got K-State at home on senior night, and then you got Waco, and you got playing down in Houston.
But even if, you know, I think in our minds, if you win one of those games on the road, either Baylor or Houston,
probably
there's still a chance that the Jayhawks could still be
still
a five
chance.
Six.
Still things a chance. Will have to happen.
Things will be better.
And there's so many dang teams in the Big 12. I can't tell you what those scenarios are. I think last night Texas beating Texas Tech helped us. So that's one of those. Like, we want to just watch those teams that are not Houston or Iowa State.
This is when
that mix.
This is when the math starts to get complicated. Okay, you got to root for this team to win this team, and it gets really complicated.
Wake me up when there's a game left, and I have to know
what needs to happen. Last season, a week from now, we'll tell you what needs to happen.
Exactly.
What needs to happen. But anyway, in any case, getting a road win at Houston, no matter the seed,
that would help.
It can be great for us.
That would
but
help.
Anyway, we just want to talk about the Big 12 generally, and I think that the general takeaway that we've come to is that the Big 12 is getting a little too out of hand.
It's falling apart.
The
Big 12 is falling. Someone needs to get Brett. Can we get Brett Yormark on the phone? Can you call him, Kyle Forrest? Do you have his number? Just give him a call for us. Because we have a few takes, something he needs to know. He just needs to understand.
It's falling apart.
It's falling apart.
Yeah. Just send over that number. I'll get him on.
Yeah. Let me call my guy who knows the guy and Jay-Z's guy, and we'll figure it out. We'll get him on. And Andrew, it's falling apart because of a couple things. First of all, what was that? Tuesday night, you had Texas Tech and Texas people throwing crap on the floor.
Yeah, Brock Cunningham is seventh year in college basketball. the elder statesman for the Texas Longhorns. Body checks. Darren Williams.
It's a pretty good body check.
It was a pretty good body check. And, you know, somebody made the comment. I think it was Frischilla said, "That's just good
basketball. That's good basketball.
That's good basketball." Yeah, it was that's body toss. That's good hockey. That's good hockey. And he knocks him into the scores table. It was pretty vicious. The referees rightfully gave him a flagrant two and threw him out of the game. But the Texas Tech Red Raider fans, who are very passionate and passionate have a vampires. Very good home field or home court advantage, they show up when they're winning games and they cheer loudly. They were not happy.
Well, Texas, too. This is the last team. Yeah, Texas, yeah. It's a big deal to them. Not happy at all. And by the way, they're getting their butts kicked. Texas was up by 20 points. I mean, it was a no-show by Texas Tech.
Ejection happens, and then
they're kicking fans out.
Then the bottles start to fly.
Just everything that could go wrong went
wrong. And aggressive arrests from fans.
Yeah, like dudes like getting carried out. Thing, I mean, it was a disaster.
Like I said, it's hard to control thousands of people with a handful of officers.
But one game. We've had a lot of situations. We've had the Iowa State thing with K-State and the whole, like, people are filming stuff and the fans are going nuts. We've had
Jim Carrey guy just enjoying it.
Jim Carrey
it.
Guy, who,
just,
by the way, he and I interact on Twitter all the time. Now we're best friends. and then Hunter Dickinson last night, you're just, like, walking through dudes and starting to fight battles. And all of it stems down to one thing. There's some frustration in the league, not just a frustration from, an emotion. Like, something has frustrated the axis of the Big 12, the alignment of the Big 12, and the obvious thing that causes all of this is that Kansas is down. When you have the leader of the conference, when you have the leader of the free world, and something has gone wrong and you have some challenges to the hegemon, this is a hegemony in the Big 12. Make no mistake, Kansas has won all of the Big 12 tournaments, all of the Big 12 titles, all of them, right? Like, basically.
The fear is gone.
The fear is gone a little bit.
Blood in the water.
There's blood in the water, and it's creating a problem that's league-wide. When you have that leader, everything is stable, because you know that the big, bad hegemon, the superpower, is going to come in and make sure you stay in your place.
Kansas will win anyway. We don't need to get too amped up about this.
The refs are
going to
call the plays. It's all scripted. Bill Self's going to win. He cheats.
So
whatever it is.
What you're saying is that for the safety of the fans and the players of the Big 12, the Jayhawks need to step up.
They need to get back to the superpower level. It's the only way to restore order.
Mm.
You can't have two either. This can't be a Cold War situation. It's better than what we have now, which is mayhem. It's chaos. But
this balkanization of the Big 12 will not stand.
It cannot stand. We can't have all the people vying for the top spot. It either comes down to Kansas or maybe Kansas and an other. Like, that's the only way that makes this work. You can't have 15 programs all thinking that they can go get it, because then you're just going to create chaos. Every time in the history of the world, we have seen this happen. Every single time. When you got one leader, you know where you stand. When you got no leader, it's chaos. And it's just going to keep getting worse. People are going to get kicked out. Programs are going to get problems. I mean, there's going to be cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria, the whole thing.
It's too competitive, Brett, is what we're saying.
The league has gotten too competitive.
It's only going to get worse. Arizona's coming.
This is the problem.
Arizona's coming.
Until we restore order.
Tad Boyle's coming back.
you can march down the list, and Brett Yormark has done a lot of great things. But the one thing he needs to figure out is how to get Kansas back number one. That's the only way to save everything. Make sure Kansas gets back to number one. And that takes a little bit of Kansas, sure. But we need the refs involved. We need everybody from the conference involved. We need everyone to make just, and again, for the benefit of everyone, restoring order. That's all we're asking for.
So it's important to look forward. It's important to understanding your position and where you need to be going forward. But I want to take a moment to just lament a little bit about the perfect basketball conference that existed for the longest time. And that was a 10-team, 18-game round robin.
It's the best.
You knew that, okay, well, we're going to play them twice, home and home. We knew that. And now it's like, okay, so we just have BYU at home, and then we only have Iowa State on the road. And
don't get Iowa State back to, like, get the bank shot three that we're going to hit to make sure we win at least one of those games. Yeah.
And so it's difficult to get my mind around that this is a better way to go. You know what? And it doesn't matter, though. This is what it is. It's going to be an incredibly competitive league.
Don't accept it, Andrew.
But that we had this perfect conference for 10 years. It was a lot of fun. It made the tournament fun at the end. Now we've got 16 teams that'll be in next year with
chaos.
We need someone to step
in. We need to restore
order.
That's it. That's what we need.
Oh, anyway, I'm just lamenting. But now we're moving forward.
Okay,
moving forward. If we're a 5 seed, hey, I'll be there Wednesday.
I'll be there Wednesday, guys. Guess we'll be there. Yeah. I mean, what else can you do?
Think of it as an extra day to see your Jayhawks.
It's an extra day to see the Jayhawks and a chance potentially to play the bench a little more, get a lot of rest, and hopefully get people good for March, because that's all that really matters here.
Yeah, right. I mean, Bill Self said it on Tuesday. He said, we're not going to win the league now. But before that, he said, we weren't going to win the league anyway. Houston and Iowa State put themselves in the position to win the league. So it's all about what are your objectives here. And I think we just need to have one.
The only objective is
put yourself
healthy.
In the best position on first round of the tournament.
That's the only objective left. That's the only objective. Who gives a crap about the Big 12 tournament right now? At this point in the seeding, we're going to be a 2 or 3 seed probably no matter what.
Maybe I'm just wishful thinking here, but it's a luxury that we get to think this way. We only have one focus, and that is not the Big 12 tournament.
What if, I mean, that is a crazy thing to think about because we just haven't had this situation. Like, what if that is what they're thinking about?
Yeah, we're still fighting for seed, though. That's important.
I understand.
I mean, I think that you can look and see if we do, win the Big 12, like maybe there's a shot at a high 2 seed. I don't think there's a 1 possibility, but if you lose out on the Wednesday, we're looking at 3 or 4.
Probably, but you heard Brian. I agree with him. And unless we have good McCullough back, the ceiling here is probably not a Final Four national championship team. Do whatever you can to get healthy, mm-hmm. whatever it takes. Give Kevin some healing powers. Give him that magical Mahomes dust, whatever it is, put on the ankle. Like, that's, we need to do that. And then you need to get all the rest of the guys, including Johnny and Hunter, healthy as well. Because they're not playing fully. I mean, even Juan, not playing fully healthy. Get them healthy. I want to see the bench play more minutes against, like, K-State. I want to see more minutes in that Wednesday game of the Big 12 if we play there. I think that at this point, all that matters is March. All that matters is the NCAA tournament.
That K-State game means a lot to me, though.
Well, that's fair.
Let's make sure to win that game.
Win that game. But right now, if let's say Ken Pom's right. Ken Pom's a fraud. But let's say he's right, and we go 1-2, and then we win one game on Wednesday and lose on Thursday. Let's just say that's how this plays out, which is probably per Ken Pom what it would be, right? Or close to it. Maybe a coin flip on that Thursday game. That's a 3 seed. Probably, right?
Yeah.
You look at full resume, 3 seed. What's the best we could get? You win out.
High 2.
Probably 2 seed. So 1 seed line is the difference between what we could probably do playing 50% and playing the best we can and go undefeated and be hurt and tired going into March. I'm just saying, it's not at this point in the season, all that matters is being healthy. And restoring order in the Big 12.
Restoring order is the order of the day, Kevin. All right, Kevin, we have one more segment to go. All the betting sites put together prop bets, and they go pretty deep. But they don't go deep enough for us. So Kevin and I put together some prop bets to kind of focus on what the rest of the season is going to be like. So stay tuned for that right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Back in for the final segment of Jayhawk Talk Radio. Thanks for hanging with us tonight. Thanks to Mr. Haney for joining us in studio. Andrew, I don't know if you know this about me. I know we've done 200 shows together. Did you know I like to place a wager or two? Betting man?
Oh,
did you know that?
Like put money down in exchange for a game of chance?
Jay, I'm a big game of chance guy.
Yeah?
Just a big one. You know, it's all healthy, right? It's just a little bit of... rolling the bones, as they say.
Sure.
Yeah. It has made sports more fun, I think. It's starting to become a little bit more mainstream,
which
is wild to me.
It is. You've got...
You don't need a bookie anymore. You just open up your phone.
You got Tom Brady doing MGM commercials. I mean, who would have thought of that 5 years ago?
It is a different world. However, we've noticed, Super Bowl is the one exception where you get all kinds of crazy props. You know, like, what's the Gatorade color going to be? How long is the national anthem going to go? How many times are we going to see Taylor Swift? You know, that kind of thing. Those sorts of props. In college basketball, they haven't quite got there yet. It's more like does Hunter Mickelson, Hunter Dickinson get
14.5 points?
Yes, 10.5 rebounds, right? Over under. We need some more. So I'm gonna throw a few out.
We need to go deeper.
You need to throw a few out. We're gonna wager these together as we close out here. Play at home if you would like to as well. We'll play book with you. I'll throw one out here. You can just tell me what you think to get us started. This is Hunter, by the way. It has to do with Hunter. How many technical fouls the rest of the way? I'm gonna set the over under at 1.5.
I'm going to go under, and I'll tell you why. Hunter knows, I guess he did get one yesterday. He knows how to push the boundary just to the limit. So it's 1.5 is what you said. So he can get one, mm-hmm. and I'll still be under. I'm going to go under.
I'm going
to
go
over. Because I think he's got the skill to avoid it.
I'm going to go over because for KU to hit full ceiling, I need villain Hunter to be true villain Hunter and back it up. And I think he draws his own energy from that kind of stuff. Now, last night he didn't. Last night he went villain Hunter, got that technical, and got worse. So whatever it is he needs to do, maybe it's a bigger technical. Maybe it's a harder foul. Maybe it's doing something else. He needs to find that energy, hone it for good, and he might average a technical a game. The West Russell.
He won't average a technical game. Bill Self likes players who are aggressive and players who are passionate, but he will not appreciate that. I mean, have we reached that level.
He has the reputation now, though, so he'll get quicker whistles like the Morris
Twins did.
Yeah, he's
got a bit of a Draymond issue going on. All right, let's move on. Kevin McCullough, I have this, and I've tried to gather a bunch of information from, this maybe it was influenced a little bit by Brian, from what I heard from Bill the past couple days. Chances that Kevin McCullough plays again this season, and I've set the money line at -150. So you're not getting even money back if he plays.
And what is the if he doesn't play, what's my number?
Let's say I'm gonna do some juice for me on that, but mm-hmm. So +120.
Okay. Hilarious that you and I had the same exact bet written down. We have not talked about this. Mine was -140 and +115.
Oh, so very
close. So we were very close.
Very close. Wow.
Very close on that. And I'm going to go ahead and say I'll eat the juice and go, I say he plays. I think we get him back for the tournament. I think he's too...
For the NCAA tournament?
For the NCAA tournament. Okay. The games that matter, I think he's back for. We talked about putting bad tape on film or something like that. You don't want to put bad tape on film. Get that. He is clearly his people right now. I think there is a point that can be made. You hear Bill Self trying to motivate him. Motivate him to play. I think he thinks he can play. Kevin McCullough thinks he cannot.
He came back to Kansas to play. This is his fifth year here.
I think
he came here
in
to
the
play.
Game that matters, one game sample size, two game sample size, three game sample size, after a month of rest, I think he plays. Between now and then, I don't think he does. And frankly, I wouldn't if I were him either. Have a small sample size. You're not going to get knocked in the draft. You still got all freaking year to go, rise back up draft boards. I think he plays.
Okay. You have one more? Yeah, I guess we have the same one.
I got another one.
Okay, go ahead.
What are the odds we win our last three regular season games?
Wow. So calculate that. Give me what you have.
I'm going to say +350.
+350. I would not take that.
what I wanted to know.
I would need more.
You get 3.5 to 1.
I would need more. I guess if you bet money line 1, 2, 3... It's probably around there. It's probably a little higher.
Probably a little higher, but I'm counting that we're going to win the K-State game. So yeah. It's really, just can you go beat Baylor, which you normally do in this situation, and then you got, essentially, let's call it 2.5 to 1 down in Houston. I think that's probably about right.
Wow. Okay. I'm not taking the bet, though.
Still not taking it.
Still not taking it.
All right. There you go.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's obviously tough to
put
on
the
road.
What if I give you 5 to 1?
I'll take that.
Okay. Just wondering what the line was.
No, that's not great. All right, Kevin, I'm going to have one more here. Okay. Just talk about Big 12. Chances that the Big 12 gets 9 teams into the tournament? I think I take that. What about 10? Can K-State slide in?
Can K-State slide in? They are 2-0 in their last two, right?
I'm not betting on K-State.
I don't think I can bet on K-State.
I'm not betting on K-State.
That means they'd probably have to beat KU. That wouldn't be good.
All right, the next time we're back. So we have Baylor on Saturday, K-State on Tuesday. Two big games. The next time you'll hear from us, we'll have those games in the books, hopefully coming off a big win against both the Bears and the Wildcats. Get excited.
Get excited. Thank you, Brian Haney, for joining us in studio. Fun show, Andrew. 200th show. We'll be back for 201. Look forward to that.
There's probably a lost episode in there. We're probably several off here.
It's like 206. Yeah. That was a good point. Yeah, we probably are. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Appreciate you. Rock Chalk, let's go get some dubs this week. We do. Forget this BYU game. Burn the tape. Appreciate you listening. Rock Chalk. They know at Allen Field that we gonna keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the game.